I had one of the greatest heroes in the world. It was the great England goalkeeper, Gordon Banks. And I still remember to this day exactly where I was the first day I saw him. And I know the date. It was the 30th of July, 1966. First live game of soccer I ever watched, which was the World Cup final between England and West Germany, broadcast from Wembley. And around that time, I was 10, and many of the boys would have been playing football, and I would have lacked confidence in myself, and I had very low self-esteem because in later life I discovered that I'm dyslexic, and I had this terrible sense of being stupid. So I was always glad for the lads to let me hang out with them. And of course, when they played football, the two best players would pick the best players in descending order, and the last two, you know, had no choice.
Right.
And it was simply to go into goal, yeah, if they wanted a game.
Yeah.
And that's why I became a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
But I discovered that, you know, I had a talent for it. I had good reflexes, good handling. And then I discovered this man, Gordon Banks. Yeah. And he became an absolute idol in my life. And the other amazing thing, and it's something I've always, always, always treasured, is this. I mean, in later life, I mean, whoever would have thought that I would become a writer. But, you know, the first book I ever did began when I was 10. It was my giant scrapbook
of
Gordon Banks.
Yeah.
And people are amazed, and they don't realize, of course, the one that I show them is actually only one of two such scrapbooks.
Yeah.
And it's a giant wallpaper book that my mother would have looked through to pick the wallpaper for our house. And one day I was in a paint and decorating shop with her, and I spotted these wallpaper books, and I realized they'd make marvelous scrapbooks. And I asked one of the men in the shops, Tom Canning, any chance of one, and he gave me one. It was 1968, and I've treasured it from that day to this, you know, and it's crammed only about Gordon Banks. But it meant, as a dyslexic boy, I had an interest, I had a passion, I was reading and researching about Gordon Banks, and I can safely say, and this is not meant to be a boast, but I think it's probably one of the greatest scrapbooks in existence anywhere in the world.
It sounds it. It does.
Yeah.
Now, for most people, Gordon Banks will be forever associated with that save, wasn't he?
Oh, God. I mean, in Mexico, and in the scrapbook I discovered as well, shortly before that World Cup, I actually wrote as a Derry boy living in the Craigan of all places, please God help England win the World Cup. And I would have prayed at Sunday Mass, like in St. Mary's Chapel in the Craigan, like that England would play well, but particularly Gordon Banks, you know. And God, my prayers were answered when I saw this amazing save from Pelé. I can still see Felix, the Brazilian goalkeeper, having collected a ball from, I think it was Brian Lebon. He rolled it out to Carlos Alberto, the Brazilian captain, who spotted Jairzinho on a run, and he hit it long and hard up along the right wing. And I remember Cooper came in to tackle Jairzinho, but, you know, with just a magical touch, he left Cooper a spectator. And he ran the ball to the England byline and crossed it over the head of Tostão. And then suddenly Gordon Banks, who was at the front post watching Tostão, turned around, and of course he saw the danger. And it was here, this puma called Pelé, leaping for the ball.
Yeah.
And it was a magnificent jump, beautifully timed, just the artistry of it. And like the hunter within then, you know, just fired off, you know, as his head cocked forward and thundered into the ball. And it was an unstoppable goal. And what's amazing to look at it today is that Pelé himself actually has his hands in the air celebrating an inevitable goal. And the crowd behind are standing up cheering. And then suddenly they're cheering, you know, dissolves into a gigantic gasp, and then they just simply applaud, because somehow Banks, who seemed to dive almost from the other end of the goal, he actually ran four paces and then from halfway he dived, and you can see that the ball has actually beaten him, but he somehow twisted his torso and reached back and managed to palm the ball over the bar.
Yeah.
And it was because, of course, it was the god of footballers and the god of goalkeepers that has made this such an iconic moment, you know.
And you describe it so well,
you
know. But also you say that Gordon Banks humanised the English for you.
Well, the troubles began, of course, in the 1970s. And I myself, 1972, was a witness at very close quarters to the massacre of Bloody Sunday. You know, I had been with with British soldiers in McGilligan on an adventure training course which my school had organised, and I'd actually really enjoyed it, and I actually got on very well with the British soldiers. They actually gave me a nickname, Banksy Mullen, because of my love affair with Gordon Banks. And but then, of course, the troubles began, and it was extraordinary, you know. I mean, how things, particularly after Bloody Sunday, began to change. And like many young boys, if I'd been 2-3 years older, it's very probable I would have joined the IRA. But it was certainly there as an option. But my room was covered with pictures of Gordon Banks, you know, who was the goalkeeper of the national team which many of these soldiers came from. I remember this soldier, and he stopped dead, and I think he probably was expecting to see maybe pictures of Martin McGuinness and Porrig Pierce and Republican paraphernalia. But he said, "What's this, mate?" And he looked around, and there was the England soccer team. We won the 1966 World Cup. And there was Stoke City, and here was posters all over the place of Gordon Banks. And I said, "He's my hero." And I pulled out from under the bed my scrapbook, and I pointed out a prized autograph I had from 1970, because it was a magical moment. My father somehow arranged for me to meet him. And he called in the officer in charge of the raiding party. And I'm sure he came into the room thinking he'd found hand grenades or light weapons or whatever. And the next thing was the raid dissolved, because all of these soldiers started to come around my scrapbook. And I ended up, I never forget it, I think, sitting on the stairs of our house in Leaning Gardens in the Craigan and giving these soldiers a lecture on Irish history. And I remember saying to them, "Listen, lads, you know, you've got to understand, if the shoe was on the other foot, if we were the bigger island, if we were more aggressive, if we were Irish soldiers over in England, you know, doing to you what you're doing to us, you know, you might be the ERA,